Hello, this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the headline, 2015 Business Person of the Year, John Kane, CEO, Kane Realty Corporation. And that cover story actually begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, A Skyline Visionary. After transforming the Midtown Raleigh landscape with his North Hills investments, John Kane turns his sights to downtown. And this article is written by Amanda Hoyle. John Kane pauses in front of the North Hills movie theater, where a couple of kids on break from school are turning cartwheels and playing tag on the common area lawn. He scoops up a food wrapper from the sidewalk and waves to a friend leaving Starbucks. In the summer, crowds will gather in the park for free beach music concerts. In the winter, the shopping center is teeming with holiday shoppers. This is John Kane's town, his neighborhood, his community. Across the street, construction crews have topped off the 18th floor of the next North Hills office tower. Another 8 building cranes have been moved into place for other building projects underway, plus more ordered and on standby. In the 15 years since he acquired the old North Hills Mall on Six Forks Road in Raleigh, nearly $1 billion worth of new buildings, infrastructure, and parking decks have been completed, and he estimates that another $500 million in new construction will be underway in early 2016 between projects nearing completion and buildings just getting started. It's pretty mind-boggling even for me, and we've been working on all this stuff for a while, says the 63-year-old developer. While Kane may have spent much of his early career as just a retail guy, as some in the field have reflected, that is no longer his legacy. The expertise that he and his team at Kane Realty Corporation have developed at North Hills, building a business district of retail, office, residential, and recreation, is a skill set that now attracts well-known national investors such as Duke Realty Corporation, J.P. Morgan, and Newport Beach, California-based KBS Realty Advisors. Kane Realty is regularly pitched on potential projects and tricky land deals across the Southeast. Most they pass on pretty quickly, he says, but others, like the $80 million Stanhope student housing project on Hillsborough Street in Raleigh, and the proposed $125 million The Dillon project in the capital city's downtown district, are projects that fall smack in the middle of their wheelhouse. There are certainly easier ways to make a profit, says Mike Smith, president and chief operating officer of Kane Realty, who has been working with or alongside Kane since 2000. We joke that the best business model is to cut and paste, just find a model that works and keep doing it over and over again, but we're clearly not doing that. The pro forma of any new project, whether for real estate, transportation, healthcare, economic development, or any other number of initiatives in which Kane's involved, must, of course, be profitable and make sense. But the plan, he believes, should improve the lives of and create value for its neighbors and the surrounding community as well. He is a very savvy, visionary entrepreneur who just gets it, says Mark Laporte, a partner with Kane on 3 hotel projects in Raleigh so far, with more in the pipeline. He's not just a retail guy or just an office guy like some commercial real estate developers. He has a unique perspective across all the real estate segments. For his work in accelerating the build-out of North Hills with additional office towers, retail projects, and his entry into downtown Raleigh to revitalize the warehouse district, John Kane receives the 2015 Triangle Business Journal's Business Person of the Year recognition. Spheres of Influence. Success sometimes means calling in a few favors. In the past couple of years, Kane has become the common denominator among many of the Triangle's influential business groups, including an appointment by Wake County to the Raleigh-Durham International Airport Authority Board and a gubernatorial appointment to the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina. Normally, one who listens intently and plays a more supporting role to others, Kane, sources say, played an integral part in helping secure the recently announced nonstop flight between Paris, France, and Raleigh-Durham that is being touted as a huge economic development win for the region. He helped establish, behind the scenes, an escrow fund worth $1.1 million of both public and private dollars that Delta Airlines will be able to use to help mitigate any shortfall that is anticipated in the flight's first year. Along with his own money, Kane reached out to some of the contacts he's made through his positions on the State Economic Development Board, the Research Triangle Regional Partnership Board, and other business groups to help convince executives at Red Hat, MERS, and Quintiles that they should contribute also, shoring up the funds needed to match the money committed by the local governments. It is easier to ask someone else to contribute to something if you are as committed and behind it as you are asking them to be, Kane says. But without his supplying context between the different groups, that deal might not have been able to come together. He's certainly giving back and doing a lot of good things, says Raleigh lawyer Gary Joyner, the chairman of RTRP, who will be handing the gavel to Kane, the board's chair-elect in July 2016. It's been great having him on our board since he knows more about what's going on. It's helped a lot. Over the years, Kane has also become more involved in helping political candidates that he chooses to support. He and his wife, Willa, have hosted numerous fundraising events and parties for local, state, and national Republican candidates at their Raleigh home over the years, including fundraisers attended by then-U.S. President George W. Bush in 2008 and then-vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan in 2012. Kane Realty's Mike Smith was part of Governor Pat McCrory's transition team after his election in 2012. Bonner Gaylord, Kane Realty's general manager and a Raleigh City Councilman, while technically politically unaffiliated, counts his boss and other Kane Realty executives among his largest campaign contributors when citywide elections are held every 2 years. It was his idea to run, Kane says, of Gaylord's choice to run for Raleigh City Council in 2011. At first, when he came to us about it, Mike and I were thinking, well, that's a vote we'll never get, due to conflict of interest rules, but we're about giving back and that goes for the whole company. But don't think for a moment that Kane shies away from opining on the state of North Carolina and the country. He is quick to admit that he is warming up to Senator Marco Rubio and the Florida senator's plans for the country should he become the president of the United States. Kane also believes North Carolina is in better shape today economically than what it was just a few years ago. He gives minimal credit to President Obama and shows concern over many of the president's initiatives related to job growth and health care. If one talks to him long enough, one concludes Kane is obsessed with the free market, an unregulated environment for businesses and, across the board, lower taxes. But as he quickly points out, not everything circles around profit. Kane Realty is about creating communities, and a favorable business climate creates opportunities for everyone. Greenville groundwork. Despite his influence today on state politics and national candidates coming to him for financial support, Kane's fondest attachments remain local. Speck Underwood, co-founder of what is now Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, York Simpson Underwood, has known Kane since around the time he met and married the young Willa Jones of Raleigh some 35 years ago. Kane's father had been friends with Willa's father since their days growing up in Roxborough and from school at NC State University, but Kane, 3 years older, had not met Willa until stopping in one night to visit with her parents during a trip to Raleigh. Within 4 weeks, they were engaged to be married. "It was love at first sight," he says. "I know a lot of people say that, but it really was." Back then, Kane was still living in Greenville trying to manage his first shopping center property, an outdoor retail center called Pitt Plaza. He'd moved there in 1978 after spending his first 4 years out of college working for his father's construction company, George W. Kane Incorporated. The company, founded by Kane's grandfather, built many of the landmark properties around Raleigh, Durham, Greensboro, and Winston-Salem, including the Durham Bulls Athletic Park, the Hudson Belk Building in downtown Raleigh, and parts of the Four Seasons Town Center Mall in Greensboro. But all three of the Kane brothers chose different paths in life outside of the construction business, and George W. Kane Incorporated was sold to an Atlanta construction firm in 1991. Kane's calling was real estate management and development, With a bit of backing from his parents and 100% seller financing from the previous owner, he bought Pitt Plaza, which he says was in pretty pitiful shape at the time. The center is now the Belk-anchored Greenville Mall. It was also while living in Greenville that Kane and some partners opened up their first fitness gym, the Greenville Athletic Club, and a concept that expanded into 8 locations in Raleigh, Wilmington, and other parts of the state. He later sold half of the company to the owners of Gold's Gym and the other half of the company in 2007 when his partners were ready to sell out. Most of the locations are still operating as Fitness Connection, including the one that Kane frequents for his daily workouts at North Hills. Biggest project yet. By the late 1990s, Kane, living and working in Raleigh now, had amassed a portfolio of small shopping centers across the Triangle and eastern North Carolina. He reached a deal to sell most of them in a transaction valued at $71 million and attempted to parlay his part of the proceeds into a multi-million dollar bid with O'Connor Group of New York to buy all of KLM's real estate portfolio in the Triangle at the time. A deal that would have included North Hills Mall and much of the then undeveloped Wakefield property in North Raleigh and Weston property in Cary. But KLM decided instead to piecemeal the properties, and the O'Connor Group ended up buying the North Hills Mall and Plaza properties with another real estate development company, New England Development. As New England was putting together a plan for a major renovation to the mall, that company was acquired by Simon Property Group, and O'Connor was left holding the bag at North Hills. Kane had kept in touch with the investors and in 1999 purchased from them the North Hills Plaza grocery-anchored strip center on Six Forks Road near his home for $9.5 million. That property is now anchored by Total Wine. At the time, Kane says he had no interest in buying the mall property across the street. That property was in horrible shape, he says, and they still had a long-term lease with JCPenney. I'd have 5 or 6 leases with JCPenney over the years, and they can be a very difficult department store to partner with. But after 2 years of back-and-forth negotiating with O'Connor Group and with JCPenney, whose executives agreed they wouldn't try to block a complete demolition of the rest of the mall property, Kane bought the mall for $15.5 million. Another challenge surfaced. Kane found out that the then chief financial officer of Kane Realty and close family friend, Clifford Mickey Clark, had been embezzling money from the company to the tune of about $1.4 million between 1998 and 2002. According to an investigation by the North Carolina Real Estate Commission, Kane personally reimbursed all of the missing funds as soon as Clark confessed. But Clark was never formally charged with a crime. Because he was a broker in charge of Kane Realty Corporation at the time of embezzlement, Kane's real estate license was suspended for 6 months. After the redevelopment of North Hills was complete in 2004, with a new Target store and a 14-screen movie cinema, the estimated value of the land and its new buildings was more than $100 million. John is the hardest working man I have ever known, Underwood says. When his imagination latches onto a project, he makes it happen. Let's build a church. Around the same time, John and Willa Kane decided to leave their Raleigh church, displeased with its direction. They joined a teaching series that Garland Tucker, leader of a Raleigh investment firm, was organizing each week in the chapel at St. David's School. Many members of the same group were also meeting to pray each week at the Underwood home, a group that also included other prominent Raleigh business leaders, such as Raleigh lawyer George Ragsdale, investors Dewey and Ann Duncan Weaver, and George Deloach. The group of 11, including the Canes, continued to add to their numbers to a point where the group collectively realized they would need a new church home to call their own. Underwood says Kane led the group through a search of about 40 sites before making a nearly $1.5 million offer to buy land across from William Peace University in downtown Raleigh. The new Holy Trinity Anglican Church congregation celebrated its first worship service in its new $1.5 million building in September 2015, and the first wedding in the new sanctuary was for the Canes' daughter, Grayson, on November 14 of this year. John and Willa's expertise in this endeavor was invaluable, Underwood says. We couldn't be more thrilled with the outcome of such hard work. Beyond Midtown. From Kane's Corner office atop the Fink's Jewelry Store at North Hills, he can, for now, keep watch of most of his new projects underway. The top floors of the 18-story Bank of America Tower are nearing completion across the street, and he can take a quick inventory of progress at four other new building projects on his 5-minute drive into work. But Kane's empire is beginning to spread beyond North Hills. The company opened Stanhope, its first student housing project, near NC State University's campus in August. And in January, Kane will break ground on The Dylan, a $125 million development with a 17-story office and retail tower with adjoining apartment building. Kane Realty Corporation has beefed up its employee base to about 65 people to help manage both the $750 million in assets already under leasing and management, plus the influx of new projects in the pipeline, about the number of employees the company had before the recession when they were forced to downsize. In real estate development, it's feast or famine. That was painful, he says, of the cutbacks in 2008, but we didn't have the work. This time we've stayed as lean as long as we could. The Kane team is also looking at projects already identified in Charleston, a mixed-use project on the Upper Peninsula it acquired with investment partners at Federal Capital Partners of Washington, D.C. FCP is also a partner with Kane at Stanhope and at The Dylan, and it doesn't hurt that Kane's oldest son, Brian, runs FCP's office in Raleigh, helping identify new real estate acquisition targets for FCP's equity funds. But father and son, Brian says, are careful to keep their businesses separate. We're doing a lot of other deals with other developers as well. It's just been fortunate that our deals together have turned out well, the younger Kane says. There have been other deals that we looked at with them that didn't make sense, so it cuts both ways. Kane Realty has also started concepting plans at Wake Forest University in Winston-Salem, Kane's alma mater, to revitalize the area around the Lawrence Joel Veterans Memorial Coliseum and BB&T Field. We are in the early stages of that process with Kane, confirms Katie Neal, spokeswoman for the university. We do not have a specific timeline, although our commitment to the Deakin Boulevard area is both significant and ongoing. And Kane says he's always on the lookout for the next good recycling project, and for him there is no stopping in the near future. He says he sees himself doing real estate deals when he is 75. I love putting the puzzle together, he says. Figuring out the vision is fun, and it's really about creating a place. It's easy to fall in love with everything, but some of these things just take time. And now we turn to our viewpoint page, to the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor of Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Insight into our 2015 BPOY selection process. Throughout the course of the year, our reporters and editors work with hundreds of local executives on stories, blogs, pictures, graphics, slideshows, and TBJ signature events. So at the end of the year, picking one individual for our business person of the year is not only an arduous task, it sometimes may seem somewhat unfair to others. We approach this selection very seriously, knowing the Triangle's business community expects us to do our homework in picking the winner. Just as in the past 12 years since we started the Business Person of the Year honor, we begin with a list that included scores of names. It took us roughly 2 hours to narrow it down to about 5 names. Reporters and editors discussed the merits of every individual and their contributions to the community at large. Then the list was pared down pretty fast for the next go-round. Among the standout list of 5, we were left with several questions on each candidate that needed additional clarification. In the second meeting, the list of 5 was cut down to 3 names. By this time, we were getting excited. Newsroom staffers were becoming more vocal, and certain candidates and often discussions led to clarity as names started to emerge as the top contenders from the shortened list. Reporters were then assigned specific candidates and were asked to make a comprehensive pitch to the selection group in the third and final meeting, keeping in mind the person's 2015 accomplishments, their community impact, local and national if applicable, and the fiscal status of the companies they run or own. Our final meeting was the most efficient as we went around the table listening to the amazing accomplishments of these three individuals and were left with the impression that the Triangle is fortunate to have so many capable leaders. Then came the voting. By then, the list was cut to the final two candidates. It wasn't unanimous at first. We discussed the candidates again, and this time we focused on the candidates' likely impact on our communities in the coming years. Finally, Kane Realty Corporation's John Kane emerged as our 2015 Business Person of the Year. We relayed the news to him a few days later, and I had the pleasure of sitting down with him at dinner for a couple of hours, talking about the post-election logistics and understanding his future plans for Raleigh and Durham. We also talked about our upcoming Power Party event on January 14th that will serve as the backdrop to honor him in front of his peers. And we can't wait to see how he and his team members chart the course for this real estate development company to become a powerhouse developer in the Southeast. And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by managing editor Rebecca Troyer. Quail Ridge Books heads to North Hills. Quail Ridge Books owner Lisa Poole and her husband, Waste Industry CEO Venpool, say they are legally bound to not talk about why they are moving Raleigh's most popular independent bookstore from its longtime home in the Ridgewood Shopping Center to North Hills. But they're plenty excited to talk about their plans to move the store to North Hills in the spring. Lisa grew up around North Hills. I grew up around North Hills. It's our neighborhood, he says. Lisa says she made sure to receive the blessing of the bookstore's former longtime owner, Nancy Olson, who sold Quail Ridge to Poole in 2013 before announcing the move to her staff of 30 people. I didn't want everyone to think that I was coming in to change everything, Poole says. Despite us moving, it's still going to be Quail Ridge. We're keeping the DNA, heart, and soul of the store. First Citizens joins forces with The Who. First Citizens Bank recently teamed up with Teen Cancer America, a nonprofit founded by Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend of The Who, which partners with hospitals to build teen-friendly environments that foster community and social interaction among patients. Daltrey recorded a new rendition of Let My Love Open the Door to support the effort. They did it. Raleigh Beer Garden recognized by Guinness World Records. Those who enjoy a pint at Raleigh Beer Garden can now boast that they drank out of a world record tap. Guinness World Records verified that the Raleigh Beer Garden has the most varieties of beer on draft tap in the world and also has the most beer brands on draft tap in the world. We are very excited to be able to call the Raleigh Beer Garden the home of two world records now, says owner Neal Hanley. It's an honor to be able to highlight the amazing craft beer scene in North Carolina within our establishment and look forward to seeing everyone from around the world come visit us. Perhaps this opens up the possibility for another world record, a person to drink the most varieties of beer from a single bar, although Biz advises anyone attempting that record to do so over the course of multiple visits. Jackie Hyland leaves broadcast career behind, heads to state government. Former WRAL anchor Jackie Hyland says she's looking forward to a slower pace. After spending 22 years in broadcast television, Hyland turned in her microphone to become the new public information officer for the North Carolina State Board of Elections. Hyland says she is looking forward to seeing more of her family who have moved with her and really put up with me in my career. She has two teenage girls who really need their mom, she says, and Hyland wasn't able to see much of them during the work week. Her news reporting career took her to New York City in 2000, and she was thrust into the thick of 9/11 coverage quickly, including a subsequent plane crash in Queens and the anthrax scare. I was literally on the ground for those stories every single day, she says. That's something that's obviously going to live with me for the rest of my life. And finally, in a section called They Said It, the Federal Reserve is likely to raise interest rates at its upcoming policy meeting, December 15th through 16th. Biz asked area CEOs whether it is the right time to raise them. Robert Luddy, CEO of Captive Air Systems. Yes, the Fed should not be manipulating interest rates, as artificially low rates distort market signals, undermining legitimate economic growth. Bob Hatley, CEO of Paragon Bank. I think the Fed has backed themselves in a corner and simply has to raise rates due to the high degree of recent discussions on the topic. There is no perfect time to raise rates. This will send the public the right message that the economy is indeed healing. John Kane, CEO of Kane Realty Corporation. Yes, the market has had the rate increase built in for some time. The rate increase will give confidence to the markets that we are stable and the future is bright. Ward Nye, CEO of Martin Marietta Materials. Yes, it's time to raise rates. If not now, when? Uncertainty over the timing of the increase has been disruptive. Further, it's unhealthy for equity markets to be driven by central bank actions. Attention needs to turn away from central banks and toward the real economy. Scott Custer, CEO of Yatkin Financial Corporation. Looks like I will be the one to take the opposing view and say, I don't see a need for raising rates. There is nothing different today than in the past months. If there is a need to raise now, then why did they not do it earlier? The economy is still fragile in many spots, and an increase now is simply because they feel they have talked too much about it. Jim Whitehurst, CEO of Red Hat. I do think it's time for the Fed to raise rates. We are clearly seeing asset bubbles emerge, which is typical in interest rate environments like this, in particular with high tech, private market valuations. It's time. Let's do it. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page written by Amanda Hoyle. The main article, First Property Reappraisal in 8 Years Shows Strong Commercial Growth in Wake, Durham. Tax officials in both Wake and Durham counties have released the results of their respective countywide property reappraisals, an event that for at least the past 40 years happens only once every 8 years. Under state law, every North Carolina county must conduct a reappraisal of every real property parcel at least once every 8 years. Counties have the option of reappraising properties more often, but Wake County has been on an octennial cycle since 1976. In each of the appraisal cycles since 1992, Wake County property values have increased an average 40% in value compared to the previous cycle. However, the 2016 report that was released December 7 shows that overall property values increased only 5% since the country's last reappraisal that became effective January 1, 2008. Residential values in Wake County were essentially flat compared to the 2008 review, says Revenue Director Marcus Kinrade, primarily due to the nearly 4 years of lost growth in value due to the 2008 recession. We started seeing values fall around July 2008, Kinrade says, and we really didn't see them start going back up again until mid-2012. Commercial property values in Wake County increased an average 19%, with much of the new wealth centrally focused among the market's fast-growing apartment communities. Apartment property values on average increased 54%. A report presented to the Durham County Board of Commissioners by Tax Administrator Kimberly Simpson was less detailed, but it does show that Durham County property values increased at a more robust rate than in Wake County. Residential property values increased on average 11.9%, according to Simpson's report. Commercial property values increased 27.1%, and industrial property values increased 10.4%. But whether or not a property owner will see an increase or decrease in their annual property tax bill following the reappraisal won't be determined until after the fiscal year 2017 tax rates are set by the county's Board of Commissioners. Property tax bills will be mailed in July 2016. European grocery giant Lidl, spelled L-I-D-L, picks first supermarket sites in Raleigh and Cary. Lidl, Europe's biggest discount grocery chain, looks to finally be making some moves in the Triangle market as the company gears up for a big expansion of its supermarket chain into the U.S. Lidl has recently filed new site plans with the planning departments in both Raleigh and Cary, seeking permission to build a 36,170-square-foot standalone grocery store on infill properties in each municipality. In Raleigh, Lidl is negotiating to buy a 7.2-acre site at 4308 Wake Forest Road near the McDonald's at Ronald Drive and the Walmart Supercenter on New Hope Road. In Cary, Lidl has filed site plans under the name HP Drive Grocery Store for a 3.5-acre location at the northwest intersection of North Harrison Avenue and Grand Heights Drive, across from Harris Teeter-anchored Harrison Point Shopping Center. Cary Town Center signs new entertainment tenant in Old Harris Teeter. The owners of Cary Town Center Mall may have lost out as the future home of a Topgolf entertainment complex, but they've managed to score another deal with a big entertainment concept that's expanding rapidly across the U.S. Sources have confirmed that Jump Street, a Colorado company that's so far opened 15 indoor trampoline, bounce house, and entertainment complexes across the country, has signed a deal to take over the former Harris Teeter grocery store building at 1111 Walnut Street next to Cary Town Center Mall. It is slated to open in March 2016. Owners of Architecture Bar opening new taco bar. Raleigh restaurateur and bar owner John Sealbinder, whose local Icon Hospitality Group owns the Architect Bar and the Level Up Kitchen Plus Barcadium, is opening yet another establishment, a taco bar. Virgil's Original Taqueria will be located below the Level Up at 126 South Salisbury Street in downtown Raleigh. And finally, in a section called He Said It, the quote, "The state has plenty of land that's less valuable than this land." And that's from North Carolina Budget Director Lee Roberts on the state's plan to vacate the school textbook warehouse and motor fleet management operations buildings at the corner of Blue Ridge and Reedy Creek Roads in West Raleigh and offer the 43-acre site up for redevelopment under a long-term land lease. And now we turn to the On Technology page in the Triangle Business Journal, written by Lauren Onasorge. The first headline, IBM unveils new agile workspace in RTP. IBM, the mammoth technology services company that used to be known for narrow hallways and windowless offices, is debuting what it calls an agile workspace. Employees already working out of the 50,000-square-foot prototype at the 002 building aren't assigned one of the adjustable mobile desks. They're assigned a neighborhood where they can pick their own workspaces, from the nook with the green couches to the first-come, first-serve telephone conference rooms. It's part of a campus-wide makeover, says site lead Fran O'Sullivan, who gave us an exclusive tour the day before the official debut on December 8. In addition to the third-floor makeover, just the first in a series of planned renovations across the campus, she says the first floor of the 002 building will host a Watson showroom, a place to demonstrate IBM's buzzed about and Jeopardy-winning artificial intelligence technology. NCSU researcher, how driverless cars could deliver your groceries. With a tap of your app, you'd never have to run out for milk again. No midnight diaper trips or early morning dry cleaning runs. That's because you'd have driverless minions, aka unmanned cars and drones, to do all your errands for you, from picking up packages of toilet paper to delivering your pizza. That's the futuristic world envisioned by NC State University researcher Michael Kay. 10 years ago, when I would talk to people about it, they would routinely say, "Not in our lifetime," he says. But now students, when you talk about driverless vehicles to them, it's old stuff. It's not even here yet, and they've moved past it. While he's leaving the engineering of the vehicles themselves to the Googles and Amazons of the world, from his office in Raleigh, he's working on a support network with small distribution centers peppered along the route from Walmart and Target to your home. Everything from the store back to the supply chain back to even China. That whole part of logistics is currently very efficient, he says. It's really from the store to the home where the opportunity lies for future improvements. He sees the role of retailers changing. Currently, they're places where people go into, but in the future, I think they'll function as warehouses for home delivery, he says. The bulk of the store will be inaccessible to customers and will house automated systems. Big trucks will come in with merchandise, and the driverless vehicles will take those wares to you, making stops at distribution centers along the way. The distribution centers could be small, located in a vacant spot in a strip mall. He envisions orders taking place over a couple of days. You'll order items as you realize you need them, say when your detergent is running low or you're on your last roll of paper towels, and the delivery would actually arrive when you file for what he calls a trigger order, something you need right away, such as a pizza. New co-working space coming to Five Points. Starting in February, the old Winn-Dixie building on Whitaker Mill Road in Raleigh becomes the Loading Dock, a co-working hub. That's according to Carter Ellis, community manager at Murphy's Naturals, who has been working for the last several months to organize the space. We realized we wanted to take our story to other people, Ellis says. It's a story of a startup that for a time operated from a storage container, so Murphy is in a unique position to relate to area innovators who have to be creative with space. The original idea behind the loading dock was to make a place for other maker-driven companies like us. You need a loading dock. You need space. But now the idea is broader. The plan is to house 25 individual workers cohabitating the space when it opens in February. They'll get free Wi-Fi and coffee, as well as access to conference rooms. And in the spring, office suites will be available. The space currently has 4 suites and is planning to construct 5 to 8 more. He expects about 5,000 square feet of space to be available. Murphy's will be the anchor tenant. The loading dock charges $99 for a part-time membership, or 5 days per month, and $275 for a full-time partnership. And finally, in a section called They Said It, when you do reach the end of life, you have to take that asset out of use. And that's from Michael Landguth, CEO of Raleigh-Durham International Airport, on how a runway will need to be replaced in the next decade. What we realized is there's just a gap in high-performance portable audio, so that's exactly what we set out to build. Mark Buff, CEO of Raleigh-based Mohu, which has expanded past antennas and just introduced a new smart audio system dubbed B-Box. You're essentially surfing upside down on this ancient demon monkey skull. And that's from Keith Shepard, co-founder of Raleigh-based Temple Run developer Imanji Studios, on the game's latest update, Frozen Shadows, which has the Temple Runners racing through a winter wonderland. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Pharmaceuticals page, written by Jason DeBruin. The main headline: CROs eye allergen Pfizer deal. Triangle firms could feel impact on pharma merger. A combination of Pfizer and allergen would impact many industries related to pharmaceuticals and research. Contract research organizations, which do a lot of outsourced pharmaceutical research and testing, comprise a significant chunk of the Triangle's economy. Even in a worst-case scenario, however, the largest CRO in the triangle, Quintiles, would likely not see a big negative impact. For Quintiles, no single customer accounted for more than 10% of consolidated service revenue in 2015, according to its most recent quarterly filing. While that indicates a diversified revenue base, Quintiles also apparently doesn't do much work with Pfizer. Neither company breaks out individual relationships specifically, although Pfizer earlier this year picked PPD, a private CRO also with a long history in North Carolina, as a third preferred provider to go along with Parexel and Icon. Pfizer had been interested in Quintiles, according to Outsourcing Pharma. but chose instead to go with the privately held company. Even before the Pfizer allergen marriage receives a regulatory approval, there is already talk that the newly combined company could split, with one company taking the pipeline assets to work on research and development. Consider that Pfizer touted Allergan's 70 mid- to late-stage products as, quote, opportunities in key therapeutic areas, unquote. Even a small hiccup in drug development could affect CROs, which rely heavily on drug companies for work. I would have a bit more concern for the contract research companies. A lot of them rely on Big Pharma for their livelihood, Mike Bailey, director of research at FBB Capital Partners, told Bloomberg Business. If Pfizer, even in the meantime, hits the pause button, that could slow things down for contract research companies. Bloomberg points out that the risks are higher for Parexel and Icon, which generate a larger portion of their overall revenue from Pfizer. While not based in the Triangle, Parexel operates a large business unit in Durham, although it is in the process of cutting workers here. In any event, Quintiles still has a runway of business. The company began 2015 with a backlog of $11.2 billion, which was 14% higher than at the beginning of 2014. That said, new bookings have slowed in 2015, and the backlog at September 30 was $11.7 billion. And in a section called Big Numbers, 25%. Turnover for clinical monitoring jobs, those that monitor participants' health during a clinical trial, this is the hallmark position of a contract research organization, according to Judy Canavan, managing partner of HR Plus Survey Solutions, which published research on turnover in the CRO industry. 20%. Overall turnover in the CRO industry. 16%. Turnover in the broader economy. 7%. Salary increases for these clinical monitoring jobs compared with 3% increases in other jobs. And in a section called She Said It, the quote, I feel like I've seen it through to what I wanted to accomplish. It really was to prove the science, get the approval so that women could have this choice for themselves, and then really to build the team to have it really come to the realization of the bigger mission, which is the opportunity for this to go global and to be made widely available to women in an affordable way. And that quote is from Cindy Whitehead, CEO of Sprout Pharmaceuticals, the company that received the first ever U.S. Food and Drug Administration approval for a drug to treat low libido in women. One day after receiving FDA approval, Sprout was acquired for $1 billion in cash by Valeant Pharmaceuticals. Whitehead resigned unexpectedly on December 9. And finally, in a section called Market Watch, $407 million. That's the amount two major investors of Raleigh-based Inc. Research Holdings sold in a secondary offering. The two shareholders, affiliates of Avista Capital Partners, LP, and affiliates of Ontario Teachers Pension Plan, had controlled the company since taking it public, but after selling these shares, Inc. ceased to be a controlled company per NASDAQ rules. And now we turn to A Better World page, written by Todd Cohen. And it starts off with his column headlined, Medical Ministry Promotes Health. When patients at its health clinic want to improve their job skills or change jobs, Alliance Medical Ministry in Raleigh refers them to Step Up Ministry Raleigh, which offers a life skills program to job seekers. And when Step Up clients lack health insurance, the agency refers them to Alliance, which provides comprehensive primary medical care to working adults in Wake County who are uninsured. If you have access to healthy community initiatives and social supports, it will increase patients' ability to address health issues and life issues, says Meg Rader, President and Executive Director of Alliance. To help raise awareness of their collaborative work and generate funds to help support it, Alliance and Step Up piloted Share the Pie, selling 500 donated pies for Thanksgiving. The effort, which recruited professional bakers from restaurants, caterers, and bakers in Raleigh and Cary, raised $12,500 and likely will be expanded next year. Founded in 2001 and operating with an annual budget of $1.4 million, 17 employees, and 250 active volunteers, Alliance serves about 4,000 patients. In addition to comprehensive primary care, it provides lab work donated by Rex Healthcare and medicine either at reduced cost or free. In partnership with at least 20 organizations, Alliance focuses on the interconnectedness between health, wellness, jobs, and poverty. It also works to connect patients to resources for healthy food, exercise, physical activity, and other support services such as job training, child care, and transportation to address barriers to economic stability. Alliance is one of five agencies in Wake County that is piloting a community-centered health home model, one of 12 pilot programs supported by the Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina Foundation. Alliance and YMCA of Triangle already have piloted the kind of program the model is looking for. Alliance now refers its patients in Southeast Raleigh who are identified as pre-diabetic to a diabetes prevention program provided by YMCA of the Triangle. Through the Family Table, a separate but overlapping initiative supported by United Way of the Greater Triangle, Alliance is one of six partner agencies that collaborates on serving clients and collecting data to identify support services to better serve them. The food pantry at Catholic Charities, for example, assesses the employment needs of clients, perhaps referring them to Step Up or Dress for Success, agencies that can provide them with job training, classes, or programs to develop their skills in applying for jobs. Generating more than $1 million per year in contributions, Alliance in May 2014 launched Alliance Circle, a giving program that 30 women have joined by agreeing to give $100 per month for 2 years, or a total of $2,400 each, enough to support the health of 3 women at Alliance. All these organizations that are serving vulnerable populations have so much crossover, Rader says. We work on health, but unless we connect health to all these other issues people are facing, we're really not going to move forward. And in nonprofit news, Youth Nonviolence Program gets grant. Students Against Violence Everywhere, or SAVE, a national nonprofit headquartered in Raleigh, received a grant from the Allstate Foundation to, quote, empower and engage North Carolina youth in safety and violence prevention activities, unquote, according to the group. Some 20 elementary, middle, and high schools throughout the state and more than 10,000 students will be involved in the year-long initiative that focuses on youth empowerment. Movers for Mutts raises $14,000 in Durham. Local Two Men in a Truck franchises recently joined together for the Movers for Mutts campaign, a month-long fundraiser dedicated to generating donated funds and gifts for the Animal Protection Society of Durham. Last month, a check for $14,169, which includes a $5,000 match by Two Men in a Truck, was presented at the grand reopening of the company's new Durham location at 1816 South Briggs Avenue. And now we'll return to the Viewpoint page to read the Washington Watch. And it's written by Kent Hoover, who is Triangle Business Journal's Washington Bureau Chief. The headline on this Viewpoint column, NLRB's Joint Employer Designation presents small businesses with operational challenges. The franchise industry is lobbying the Congress to use a must-pass government spending bill to force the National Labor Relations Board to delay enforcing its new joint employer standard for at least 10 months. In a 3-2 decision in August, the NLRB ruled that companies are joint employers of workers if they share control over the workers' terms and conditions of employment. It doesn't matter if a company actually exercises such control. Indirect control and potential control are sufficient to be a joint employer, according to the NLRB ruling. Businesses fear this new definition of joint employer will be used to make companies responsible for the employment practices of their subcontractors and franchisees, even if they don't exercise direct control over them. The new standard could boost the efforts of labor unions to organize fast food workers. It also could force franchisors to exercise more control over their franchisees, making owning a franchise a less desirable option for small business owners. Franchise owners previously controlled their own hiring practices, working conditions, wages, and hours, according to the International Franchise Association. Around 40,000 franchise businesses with more than 75,000 locations are at risk of failure because of the high labor and operating costs that could result from the ruling, concludes a new study by Frandata. The study projects that the equity value of franchise businesses will drop by one-third to one-half. On a conference call with reporters on December 7, Dave Groenwaller, a Raleigh-based Golden Corral franchisee in North Carolina, South Carolina, and Florida, said he has pulled back on opening three new locations because of the NLRB's ruling. "We just don't know yet if your franchisor is a joint employer, if we will be a franchisee," Groenwaller said. Mike Bidwell, CEO of the Dwyer Group, said his Waco, Texas-based franchising company, which offers 11 service-based brands, has dialed back the training it provides to its franchisees because, quote, "We're fearful we'll be tagged as a joint employer if we provide the type of training we used to provide," unquote. The spending bill, which was scheduled to be passed by December 11 to avoid a government shutdown, is attracting lots of proposed policy riders, but House members on the press call said that the joint employer delay is a top priority. "We have really been pushing this," said North Carolina Representative Virginia Fox, a Republican. "Small business owners are closely watching," said Michael Lehman, executive director of the Coalition to Save Local Businesses. And finally, on the Viewpoint page, we have a letter to the editor. And this was sent in by Mary Graff, who is president of the North Carolina Nurses Association. "Your November 27 cover story on the need for rural physicians highlighted some incredibly important concerns about access to quality health care in North Carolina's rural areas. This is a vital issue for the state and one that needs to be addressed. The physicians quoted in the article raised good points. I would love to see some of their suggested improvements to the state's residency programs enacted. It struck me, however, that the only solutions presented in the article require more money. One has to wonder if getting enough increased funding from the state is a realistic goal. And even if that money does start flowing, everyone interviewed in the article acknowledges that it would take years to make any sort of impact. The good news for rural North Carolinians is that help could be on the way in the very near future, and it would not cost taxpayers a cent. A shovel-ready bill called the Modernized Nursing Practice Act is working its way through the General Assembly, and it would eliminate superfluous red tape that currently prevents Advanced Practice Registered Nurses, APRNs, from providing some of this much-needed care. APRNs are some of the most highly trained professionals in all of healthcare, and they are ready and willing to open practices in the same rural areas that physicians have been struggling to adequately cover on their own. The Institute of Medicine has advocated for these improvements for years. U.S. Senator Tom Tillis, Republican, North Carolina, even co-sponsored a bill just last month at the federal level to enact these same changes at Veterans Affairs facilities. Study after study has shown that APRNs provide care within their scope of practice that is as good as, or even better than, the same care that sometimes overlaps with physicians. APRNs can alleviate the shortages that North Carolina desperately needs to rein in, and they can do it while saving the state more than $400 million per year, according to a Duke University study released earlier this year. This issue requires a multifaceted approach. Obviously, APRNs are not the only answer. We need more providers across the entire spectrum. But this is not an either-or situation. It is time for North Carolina to take nursing forward. And with our remaining minutes, we'll now read from the People on the Move page. The spotlight is on Tony Castillo, Vice President and Partner at Harold K. Jordan & Company. Tony Castillo has now been named a partner at Harold K. Jordan & Company, whose namesake recruited him when the firm was founded in 1989. Castillo oversees the activities of all project managers and superintendents that operate out of the firm's home office in Apex. He's responsible for all estimating, contract administration, client relations, and bottom-line costs and profits in that office. While Castillo's duties have remained somewhat the same, but they have constantly expanded from a 5-person company to its current 6-fold increase in size. "Early in my career, my office was the job site trailer wherever the project was located," he says. "Now, for years in the corporate office, I miss the intensity and interaction at the job site level." The firm currently employs a total of 31 people and has projects all across the Triangle, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia. It specializes in wood-framed multifamily construction. This also includes derivatives of that type of construction, such as student housing, senior housing, continuing care retirement centers, and limited service hotels. What's one thing you wish people knew about your job? The challenges associated with delegating the growth responsibilities while maintaining a competitive edge. What are some of your major goals for your new position? We continue to adopt various new applications of technology to help our employees be more efficient and more productive. Client satisfaction is paramount to our continued success, and I am continually evaluating my performance and that of my team to ensure we address the needs and wants of our customers in the most comprehensive way possible. Biggest pet peeve? Diminished Big 12 media coverage here in ACC country. Biggest worry? With a diminishing labor force in the trades and no established system to replace those workers who are transitioning out of the market, the challenge is to build projects on time and within a reasonable budget are immense. And we'll stop as we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. The program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. You can contact us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.